Rick Stevens, financial advisor with FRS Financial Group. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision. For more detailed information regarding any of the topics discussed on today's show, please call 719-500-8700. This is Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial. Here's your host, Rick Stevens.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group. This is your host, Rick Stevens. And remember, folks, that this is your show. If you've got those questions you'd like to have answered, if you've got topics you want to hear on a future episode of Money Matters, feel free to give me a call, 719-500-8700. You can shoot me an email, rstevens@frsfinancialgroup.com, or simply go to our website, frsfinancialgroup.com, click that contact tab, send us that question, send us that topic. We would love to hear from you. Well, folks, this week on the show, Andrew is with me in studio, as always.
Mm-hmm.
And, folks, we are also joined this week by the one, the only, Kyle Fisk with the Fisk team at Pintrust Mortgage. Kyle, how are we doing today?
Hello, Rick. Doing great, other than the fact that we're at the trade deadline and my Rockies still suck. In fact, they're so bad they lost to the worst team in baseball. On the other side, in the other league, the Athletics over the weekend, it was pretty ugly.
Yes, yes. So, but hopefully
things are better in our economy than the state of the Colorado Rockies.
Yes.
Maybe not. Have you seen the markets today?
There we go.
We've got some issues. Before we can dive into that, though, folks, we do have to offer that official disclaimer that LPL Financial and FRS Financial do not endorse the guests who appear on Money Matters. And then Kyle has his own 68 minutes worth of disclaimer as well.
Here we go. All material presented today is for educational purposes, is not an advertisement to extend credit. Not all applicants are eligible for loan products offered. All loan programs, terms and conditions, including the almighty interest rate, is subject to change without notice. I'm Kyle with the Fisk team at Pentrust Mortgage Group, NMLS number 1949057, fiskmortgage.com.
And Andrew, you notice oftentimes when you hear the disclaimers, they've got to be sped up to get him in time. That was his normal speed.
I know. I mean, that's the one thing Kyle and I do have in common, is that kind of natural, quick pace. But I do like how you dropped in the almighty interest rate. I don't know if that's the official legalese, but I think we should make it that.
Why not? Let's do it.
Yeah.
We could do that. Well, folks, we are talking this week, about all those different pieces going on in the economy right now. We see all kinds of crazy stuff happen. In fact, as we are recording this, they came out at the end of Tuesday with one of the grading companies downgraded the rating for the U.S. We went from a AAA to a AA+ rating for the debt that's being issued. That has thrown a curveball to today's market. We also talked about this a little earlier. The jobs report had come out. That also threw the market for a loop. The market is behaving in a very big downward fashion on the equity side. And on the bond side, it's not behaving nicely either today, is it, Kyle?
No. In fact, we're recording this on Wednesday morning. We got a big jobs report from ADP, the big payroll company, and about double the number of expected jobs created. At least that was the headline. As you dive into the numbers, it shows a slightly different story. But mortgage-backed securities down about 30 basis points as we report on this on Wednesday. And the 10-year Treasury, which is, if you are a consumer and you want to say, what is happening to interest rates? Are they going up or are they going down? And they do both of those things routinely. My best description of interest rates recently has been choppy and sideways.
Yes.
But if you want to, you know, Andrew, as a everyday guy, if you want to watch what's going on in mortgage rates, watch the 10-year Treasury yield.
Yeah.
As the yield goes up, interest rates go up. As the yield goes down, interest rates go down. As of recording, we're up 5 basis points this morning on the 10-year Treasury yield. We're back over 4% at 4.08. Probably have lost 15 or 18 basis points in the last 2 days.
Okay.
Some of that also related to people not understanding what credit ratings for the United States of America looks like.
Right, right. And quite frankly, not even understanding what all the ratings are overall, right? Because we've got first, we have a variety of companies that rate the bonds themselves, and you get everything from the AAA down to AA to single A, then you go triple B, double B, single B. Anything below a B is typically what we would think of as the junk bond. So those of us growing up in the 1980s, we remember the stories about Mike Milken and the junk bonds. And quite frankly, that's how Ted Turner actually ended up with CNN, through the junk bond side of things. The junk bonds are the ones that have that higher interest rate on them because they are a bigger credit risk. And the thought process on some folks is when the U.S. government went from a triple A to a double A plus rating, oh my goodness, they've downgraded our credit score. But that's really not that much of a downgrade, right? That's more like going from an 850 to like an 800, 820 credit score from the triple A to the double A plus, right?
Yeah, but doesn't it come down to perception and that defining reality that if they're downgrading the credit rating, they're simply saying there isn't as much stability, there's not as much confidence in the U.S. economy, in the U.S. instrument of treasury debt that we issue. And, I mean, it's been the standard of the world economy, you know, of the safest place ever to put your money. And isn't the perception it's now a less safe place? And doesn't that lead to people buying and selling, you know, and selling off those assets?
And, you know, the crazy thing with that is sort of, right? Because, yes, we do see going on in today's market, right? That whole crazy, oh, my goodness, let's sell, let's sell, let's sell. But it's sort of that, while, yes, there's a downgrade in the credit rating, which means that the government will be paying higher interest rates on bonds, it's not like they went from AAA to junk bond status.
But does anybody really recognize that, though? All they
nobody
see is the
outside
headline.
Of the industry. Yeah. But nobody out of
so
the industry.
So let's ask the common man, right? You see the headline.
Yeah.
U.S. credit rating declines.
Yeah. U.S. downgraded. It just leads to that kind of panic idea that, hey, you know, waters are getting a little more rocky. We're getting a little bit more waves out there, a little rougher. Maybe it's time to maybe brace for something. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing right now is kind of that bracing for any potential impact, even though really there's nothing that concerning to be bracing for, sounds like.
Well, there continues to be talk of recession. I know we're going to get into that a little bit on today's show of, you know, but I think that just feeds into, I mean, we've talked about this on the show many times before, that the drivers here are one of fear, right? And so as an investor, as a homeowner, as somebody looking to buy or sell real estate, invest in my 401k, manage my financial future. I see things like this, right? And I would assume that the common man sees these types of headlines and it stokes that fear that I'm going to lose.
Mm-hmm. Yep, very, very much so. And that's, you know, in my world, in your world, Kyle, that's where we really kind of get to come in and go, let's look at the logic, let's look at the rationality of what is going on versus what the numbers actually say, what the data really means, because as we know, the headlines are not grabbed by boring things.
No, I think let's dive into unemployment. These employment statistics, right? So, just today, let me pull it up here. ADP employment report for July showed 324,000 jobs created, higher than the roughly 190,000 expected.
Yeah.
However, they also went back to the June numbers and revised the monster June figure down by 42,000 jobs. So there seems to be a lag effect in the measuring to say this is what we see today, but then down the road when we look back, it wasn't quite as rosy. The other thing we have to remember is many of these jobs are either there's a very big potential based on some of the changes in how we're measuring that some of these jobs are being counted more than once,
right?
And there's also this idea that in more economic turbulent times, we've seen some of the headlines. Yellow Trucking, third largest trucking provider in the country, went out of business and laid off 50,000 people.
Yeah.
CVS Pharmacy just released a number saying they were laying off 15,000. Now, those are single instances, right? We're talking about the macro number. But not only are we potentially counting jobs twice, but sometimes we count these jobs. If I get a part-time job, I keep my, you know, hey, mortgages are down, I'm not doing as much business, I better go drive for Uber or deliver pizzas or deliver the newspaper. I may get a part-time job or two part-time jobs,
right?
And it still gets counted. There aren't, you know, as additional employment.
Yes.
Has it really changed my employment status? Or did we really create two new jobs if I deliver pizza and the newspaper? Right. These are some of the things as we dive into the nitty gritty of it that really helps us better understand what do these numbers really mean. The one other thing I will point out, I got this Elliot Eisenberg, the Bowtie Economist, fantastic guy. If you're looking for an econ geek to follow on Twitter and get his updates, really smart dude. Loved what he had to say about unemployment data relative to recession. Everybody's saying, you know, the Federal Reserve said the labor market is too strong.
Yeah.
Right. Well, get this. Looking back on changes in the U.S. unemployment rate data since 1953.
That's just a couple years worth of data.
A period including 10 recessions. On average, the unemployment rate has not noticeably changed during the 12 months leading up to a recession. So coming up to a recession, nothing really changes, which is what we've seen. Our unemployment data over the last 12 to 18 months really hasn't changed since kind of post, once we kind of caught back up after COVID, the unemployment numbers have been very, very stable. Now get this though, once the recession begins, unemployment rate slowly rises and peaks 12 months after the start of a recession, which again, we only know when we look back in time,
right.
But 12 months after the start, the level of unemployment is on average 3 percentage points higher than when the recession began. Here was the bottom line takeaway. The unemployment rate is not a leading economic indicator. It doesn't tell us where we're going. It tells us where we've been.
Yes. Yeah, very, very much so. There are a lot of those different pieces out there, those different numbers that as we're looking at that, what used to be the textbook definition of recession, right? Those consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth that at this point in time, we've totally thrown out with the baby with the bathwater on that. We've started creating all these different pieces. When we look at actually a lot of those different indicators, each one happens at a different time, totally different time. They don't all happen in lockstep with one another. And yes, it is a lot easier to look backwards to be able to say this happened and that's when it started, when you're 9, 12, 18 months after something has started. Whole lot easier.
So does that beg the question, and we talked about this a little bit before we started recording, I know we're looking back on the Federal Reserve last week.
Right.
A week ago raised the federal funds rate 25 basis points.
Yep.
Now we're at 5.25 to 5.5 as a benchmark. We're at the highest federal funds rate, Andrew, in 22 years. We've seen 11 increases to the federal funds rate since March of 22.
Yeah.
So in 16 months, the fastest rate of increase in the federal funds rate ever in the history of the United States economy. When you hear numbers like that, what is your take on it? What do you think when you hear those kind of stats? Highest federal funds rate in 22 years, fastest rate of increase ever, 11 increases in the last 16 months.
That they've just been raising the interest rate more than they've ever done before, and that they're, you know, doing whatever secret math that only they know to try and get a handle of this situation that they may or may not have created in the first place.
So, I'm gonna die. I gotta push back. I'm getting antsy over here. Okay, the secret math. Tell me, as the everyday guy, when you hear the Federal Reserve, like, can you even articulate who that is, what that is, what they do?
Yes and no. They're a governmental entity kind of running the monetary policy made up of a number of regional governors coming together in some secret meeting, kind of similar to how you pick out the Pope. You have your conclave of cardinals meeting in some secret room.
White
and then
smoke.
White smoke means rates are going up. And then, you know, that's what it is. I know Jerome Powell's the head. I know he is a big fan of Stephen Volcker, who did the same thing back in the late 70s and 80s, which is where, you know, we probably should have known this is what he was going to do, because he was walking around D.C. during his confirmation hearings carrying Volcker's autobiography. So I think he kind of gave us the playbook he was going to use before he had to pull it out.
So let's dive into this, because I think this is actually, while it is a little nerd and a little geek, I actually think it's super helpful. If you're driving along this morning, you're at home, you know, drinking your coffee on a Saturday morning or on a Sunday, and thinking about what's going on with the market. Because at the end of the day, nobody really cares about what the interest rate is. They care about the fact that it costs more to put gas in their car,
mm-hmm. yes.
or the interest rates are higher for their house, or they can't refinance, or their credit card payments have gone up. I mean, this is the ultimate reality. When we talk about the federal funds rate going up, it makes the cost of money in America more expensive across the board.
Yes.
And there is a trickle-down domino effect on the cost of everything. And mm-hmm. so... And they're doing it in one sense to slow down the economy, to try and get inflation under control, right? The two big mandates of the Federal Reserve, which a great way to think about the Federal Reserve, in my opinion, is they are the central bank. So they manage the money supply of America. They're the ones who issue currency. And we can all have an opinion. And sometimes it parallels our political persuasions and sometimes it doesn't. But it's easy for us to either say we need the government to intervene and be involved and set the standards and run our lives for us. And then on the other end of the spectrum, the Jerome Powell is an idiot and the Federal Reserve doesn't know what they're doing and they're just hacking away at our economy.
Mm-hmm.
The truth, like most arguments, is probably somewhere more in the middle
yeah.
that says there is a need for a central bank. There is a need for monetary policy. And we can disagree with what they're doing, but I actually disagree that it's in a secret room or secret math. They're actually super transparent about the way they make decisions. I think we actually talked about this a few months ago when I was last on the show about how they drive looking in the rearview mirror.
Right.
And that can be really frustrating. What do I mean by driving in the rearview mirror? They say we're being data dependent. So they are only going to make decisions based on the fact that ADP says there are 327,000 jobs.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to make decisions based on the fact that PCE, the personal consumption expenditure, their favorite measure of inflation, rose 0.45% last month. Like, they're going to make decisions based on those data points. And while it's frustrating, they actually tell us exactly how they're going to make decisions. And if you look at it, if I want to play devil's advocate for a minute, are they really doing that bad of a job?
It's an awesome question. It's an awesome question, because especially if you look over the last 2 years, and yes, because that question is out there, well, didn't they okay this giant influx of money in the COVID timeframe? Could they not have determined that, well, there's this huge supply of money coming in, and with this new supply, that's going to increase demand, which will send prices higher, which, as I used to teach my Econ 101 kids, is what makes things go up, and that is the cause of inflation, supply and demand.
It all comes back to that. Too many dollars chasing too few goods.
Yes, and then you add in, at that point in time, the supply chain issues, and we can't get this, so that's going to inflate those prices higher. We should have expected inflation to happen.
But Rick, maybe
and
they did.
We've made some adjustments.
So let me. I'll play the devil's advocate, right? I'll let's push back on this, because I think this is a helpful exercise to think about the way our economy works and the direct impact on us and our lives.
Right.
So we shut down our economy. We shut down our world for 4 months.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
People, I mean, if you worked in hospitality or tourism or any of these places that weren't essential industries, you didn't go to work.
Right.
How many people do you know that foreclosed on their house during COVID?
Very few, in fact.
Yeah. Historically low levels. So people weren't getting paychecks. They weren't going to work, but they weren't. Do you know anybody that starved to death during COVID?
No.
Like we kept paying. Now, so we, yes, we put a ton of money in the economy. And you can have a political argument about whether or not that was a good idea. But what I can tell you is that not a lot of people foreclosed on their houses, historically low levels.
Right.
So people were still paying their mortgage. Mm-hmm. They were still buying food. They were still, their economy was still going.
And from that market perspective,
and did they know that that was going to create a problem down the road? I'm willing to say, is it within the realm of possibility? They absolutely knew we are borrowing trouble down the road,
right.
But we have a global pandemic. We have to fix it today. This is the tool that we're going to use to fix it, and we'll deal with the consequences later.
Right, and even from that market perspective, in 2020 and 2021, very good years as investors because
economic growth and activity. People had money. People were buying houses. People were investing in all sorts of things, whether it be the stock market or real estate or whatever. You saw economic growth and activity in spite of a pandemic. If you look at the technical recession we had in 2020, I think the final numbers came back that it was 120-day recession.
Yes.
4 months. So we can criticize, but did they actually keep us in 2020 of going off a cliff by doing what they did and then saying, okay, now we have to deal with the repercussions of that action?
So are you saying that they prevented us from going off a cliff by moving the cliff down the road and steering us towards that cliff 18 months later?
Okay, so let's talk about that cliff, Mr. Man on the Street.
Okay.
Inflation.
Yeah.
Inflation is as high as it's been in decades, okay? Over the last 18 months, it's actually peaking. Inflation's not going down yet, Andrew. It's just not going up as quickly as it was, which is a good thing. That means it's almost like it's going down.
It's slowing.
It's slowing.
It's simmering. Okay. It's not boiling. It's simmering.
So let me ask you, what do you do for fun on Saturday night, Andrew? For entertainment, you watch movies? Do you go to the movie theater?
Very rarely.
Okay. Do you have Netflix at home?
Yes.
Oh, you have Netflix.
Yeah.
Did you pay $2,500 for a Taylor Swift ticket?
No.
No.
I know you did, but I wasn't able to.
I mean, you know me, big Swiftie fan.
Yeah.
So let's think about it. On a Saturday night, have people's habits and economic activities actually really changed?
No.
Have we seen a bunch of people with this high inflation, with everything costing more, have you seen people foreclose on their houses?
No, not so much.
Have we seen people stop eating out?
No.
No.
You go to a restaurant, you can't get a seat.
Oh, and that's jobs, but that's another story for another day half the time, because half the time you can't get a seat or an hour wait, and it's, a half-empty restaurant.
Right? But so not everybody. Now, can we acknowledge that there are real – I don't mean to make light of the fact that everything costs more, and I don't mean to make light of the fact that there are people that when you increase the cost of goods 9%, that – those people that are living paycheck to paycheck, they actually do have to make different economic choices. Right. They go from buying ground beef to buying Spam, right? They start carpooling or figuring out something else because gas is so expensive.
Yeah.
So real people had to make real tough economic choices, and it did have an impact. I do not mean to take that away. But let's look at the macro, which is what the purpose of this type of show is. We're talking to all of Southern Colorado. We're looking at macroeconomic activity. It hasn't actually changed how we live. Now, some people no longer go to Taylor Swift tickets.
Yeah.
They stay home and go to Cinemark. Or some of those people just stay home and watch Netflix. But who's to say that they all still had entertainment on Saturday night, right? So is there a real – we say we pushed the cliff out. Have we really gone off a cliff? Again, just to play the devil's advocate.
I know. I know what you're getting at, but there's a lot of times where, again, you look at those core, essential things that we do have to pay for. The gas and, I'll say especially, with two little young kids, the childcare aspects, things like that, those costs that are outpacing your normal wage growth – we're seeing things in the 9-10%.
Is your child care up?
Yeah. Which is,
are you still paying for child care?
I have to. I mean, it's not like I can just let them go run the streets.
No, they could come in. They could be on your show with you.
No. No.
Has it changed your...
No, it's...
Has it really changed how you and your wife and family live your life, though?
No, it's just made it more of a pain in the what.
No, I think that's absolutely true. So I think what you just said, Andrew, is actually the reality.
Yeah.
Everything's getting stretched a little harder.
Right.
Savings are going down. People's credit card bills are going up. So is there an impact of this?
Yeah,
100%.
It's more of the tension. It's not the actual break. It's just tension
The headlines would have you think that Andrew's kids are on the street, where they really, it's just harder for Andrew and his wife to make the pennies stretch a little
it's
farther.
It's just more of a complaining about having daycare now look like a mortgage bill.
Right, right.
And paying for two houses at the moment.
Exactly. But again, while that is a real impact and it is causing us all to stretch a little bit further or not save as much or not upgrade, not buy the new whatever, right?
Right.
Keeping my car and not upgrading. Are some of those things happening? Absolutely. But has it really, when we talk about going off a cliff, I think we need to be careful. This is what the way I think the media does us a disservice in terms of the hyperbole and the sky is falling on both sides of the aisle,
right?
Of rather than saying, okay, what's actual reality? And actual reality is inflation went up dramatically. Most people's lifestyles didn't change dramatically, and inflation is now starting to come back down. Is it possible we could achieve the soft landing that Jerome Powell keeps talking about? Are we really headed for a recession?
That's a beautiful, beautiful question. We will absolutely talk about those pieces because, I have heard everything from the hard landing to the soft landing to the no landing now, getting a little bit more traction in that financial world. So let's take the break. Come back and let's take that deep dive into that recession-ary sort of discussion on there. So, folks, stick around. We're going to talk where in the world are we going when we come back. Hang in there, everybody.
Does stock market volatility have you wondering which way is up? Do the talking heads and doomsayers have you wondering if this really is the end? If you want straight answers from an advisor who isn't just trying to sell you something, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary appointment today. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC.
Well, thanks for sticking with us through that break, folks. Rick Stevens here with you on Money Matters presented by FRS Financial. In studio today with Andrew Rogers, as always, we are joined by Kyle Fisk as well with that Fisk team at Pintrust Mortgage. We've been talking, Kyle, Federal Reserve. We teased going into the break a little recession discussion. And one of those things that I want to kind of hit before we get to that recession talk, if you will, really is this sort of, if you've gone to and seen any sort of a marriage counselor, right, they're all about communication, improving communication. Do you think, this is just me spitballing this, but do you think with some better communication between what the Fed is doing and thinking, and with Andrew, the common man, perhaps some of that stress and that angst could have possibly been not necessarily avoided, but pulled back a little bit by saying something like, hey, this is what we're doing to take care of things right now. We're pretty sure, just on the basis of supply and demand, it's going to cause some inflation coming down the pike, but we've got some things that we are planning to do to take care of that as well. What, you think that could have solved maybe some of that angst?
Could have, but we also got to remember, too, when a lot of this was happening, a lot of these decisions were being announced, it was in early 2020. 2020 was an election year, so everything also had that additional spin no matter what, they would have said it was going to either be the best thing ever or the worst thing ever. There was not going to be an accurate spin no matter who you were looking at.
I think there's always the political ramifications to think about, but I think there's two other lenses you got to put on this. One lens is we have access to so much more data and information than we've ever had before.
Right.
When you look, 40 years ago, we didn't have the access to see these job numbers and these inflation numbers and the tracking and computer models
right.
where computers are actually the ones doing 80% of the buying and selling in the stock market now.
Yes.
And so they're simply going off of a headline, oh, inflation goes from 4.8 to 4.3. I do this.
Right.
And so we have all of this data, and it has led, that data, I think, has led to this higher degree of volatility. We're seeing bigger swings up or down on
right.
any given day.
Mm-hmm.
Both in the bond market, in my world, when it comes to mortgages, I'm sure in your world as
yep.
well, this higher degree of volatility because people have access to so much more information that there are reactions, knee-jerk reactions, reactions to the reaction. And so it's create, you know, in the old days, you could quote somebody an interest rate on Monday, they call you back on Thursday and nothing had changed.
Right.
Well, now you calling me Monday at 9 a.m., call me back Monday at 3 in the afternoon, and we've had two different price changes.
Right.
It's that level of volatility because I think of all of this data we have. And then the second piece to the communication side is the Federal Reserve and the leaders of these different folks that are helping drive economic and monetary policy are under such a microscope. They're
mm-hmm.
we parse out. We say, okay, there's going to be the actual announcement, 25 basis point rate hike. Now let's see what Chairman Powell says in his press conference. Let's see what the printed statement says, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
Is it more dovish? Is it more hawkish? Does he say anything about what's going to happen in September or November? All this speculation, whereas, again, 40 years ago, it was a headline in the newspaper the next morning and you didn't hear about it again for 3 months.
Right. Right. There was no more not only parsing of the words, but looking to see what the definition of the exact word used really means.
And to some extent, again, if we're going to be fair to the Federal Reserve, that puts them in a tougher spot to where do I really want to tell, even if I know what I'm going to do down the road, or even if I know what the impact
right.
is, does that make them a little more guarded of I got to be more careful with what I say and how I say it because of how the markets react? Right, it's the old.
Mm-hmm.
If I, what's the story about the carrying the bigger suitcase through the lobby? You know, of
right.
sending these Greenspan sending these
yep.
signals to the market
right.
about what decision I should or shouldn't make based on the size of Alan Greenspan's suitcase.
Right,
you know, and unfortunately, that's the world we live in. And so, to some extent, you know, just to play devil's advocate once again, should we? Maybe they actually do know what they're doing. Maybe. I'm willing to concede it as a possibility.
As there's at least a chance. There's at least a chance in there. Well, speaking of that chance, right, we also now continue to hear a little bit, maybe even more than we had in the last couple years, that discussion of recession. Are we headed there? Almost every call that I sit in on with analysts at different asset managers, virtually all of them put up the poll before they even start their call of when are we going to hit recession? Will it be 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, or not at all? And they never give what my answer always is, which was we already had one about a year and a half ago. That's when it started, but I'm the guy that taught Econ 101 and, well, maybe I have to go back and apologize to all my students now because I gave them a bad definition of consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth. Maybe. Maybe
didn't
not.
Didn't we technically just have two of those back-to-back? So what if that was a recession? So if it already happened, what was it? 6 months long?
Maybe eight.
Because Q2, Q3 of 2022.
Right.
Were the back-to-back quarters of negative GDP.
Right.
And since Q3 of 2022. So
yep,
Q4,
we have seen that continue.
Q1 of this year, Q2 of this year, we continue to see the U.S. economy expanding, not contracting.
Yes.
Now, granted, at a very modest pace.
Right.
But in spite of higher inflation, in spite of the Federal Reserve doing what it's doing, the U.S. economy continues to expand, Rick, not contract.
Yes, even though we hear about, you know, Company A, Company B, Company C, all the layoffs, hey, this one's going out. Just like, Andrew, when we talked way back about that whole banking piece, and oh my goodness, it's the third largest bank collapse. Well, yeah, it's the third largest collapse, but it was the 15th largest bank.
Yeah.
You know, so it depends on how you want to write that headline, and oh, by the way, the three banks that got taken over by the Federal Reserve and eventually sold off, they were making bad economic decisions on their own. This wasn't an industry-wide thing. So here's one of those pieces, right? When we're looking back, Kyle, historically here, we have seen across time, if you will, since about the 1950s, 13
what they would call Fed tightening cycles. 10 of those ended with a recession. 3 of those had what they would call a soft landing, meaning nothing recessionary happening in the economy itself. And again, I hear hard landing, I hear soft landing. I actually just heard last week for the first time, there might not even be any landing. So not just a soft landing, there's not going to be any landing based on, you know, this number, this number, this number, and how markets respond to that. And I think a lot of times in my world, they're not talking about the economy often. They're talking about the market and what its response will be. But from that, you know, not the mind of Rick, not the RBG version, right? The Rick's best guess. What is the KBG version, the Kyle's best guess? Are we thinking hard? Are we thinking soft? Are we thinking none? Did it already start? Did it already happen? Or is that a separate part in a different cycle? Where are we at?
When we look at this idea of recession, well, obviously we continue to see this modest rate of growth of the U.S. economy, and really that being fueled by consumer spending. One of those best indicators we can look at, and we talked about it in the earlier segment, of how, yeah, we're having to stretch the dollar a little bit more, mm-hmm. and we gripe about the cost of childcare or what it costs to fill up our gas tank.
Or bacon.
But consumers continue to spend. The consumer spending hasn't abated, and that is a leading indicator. When we see people start to really tighten the belt, really cut the purse strings and say, okay, I'm canceling my Netflix, right? But we continue to see a very strong consumer spending. Rob Hayworth, Senior Investment Strategy Director over at U.S. Bank Wealth Management, said the continued strength of the consumer is a primary driver allowing the economy to maintain positive growth so far this year. And the job market strength, we talked about the unemployment numbers, the job market strength is helping consumers keep up their spending levels. The economy continues to benefit from a very low unemployment rate, 3.6% in June, and solid job growth. As long as that continues, I'm not sure you're going to see any landing. Like, we're going to have to get to the point, to Andrew's point, is there a cliff in the future?
Mm-hmm.
Right? But as long as that consumer spending stays high, do we really see any significant change? And so the real question becomes, can the Federal Reserve combat this inflation without destroying the labor market, without driving us into a recession?
Yeah, so how long can this actually last before we run out of, you know, the, you know, stretchability? How much more can we bend before it finally breaks?
Well, that's the question. Is the aggressive rate policy of the Fed, highest federal funds rate in 22 years, 11 increases since March of 22, is that aggressive interest rate policy allowing the Federal Reserve to tackle the inflation problem while avoiding a recession and getting this soft landing? So what that might look like, a couple of people have talked about something called a growth recession. Okay, mm-hmm. So the economy may avoid a recession where real GDP growth continues mm-hmm. to increase. Back to our technical definition of a recession. However, a growth recession is where you see a economy slowing down, but with few ramifications for the job market.
Okay.
So if we don't see unemployment skyrocket, people stay employed, people continue to make money, they continue to spend money, fueling economic activity. So you slow down. We are considerably lower than the average GDP growth, about half.
Right.
About where. So it's very fair to say there is an economic slowdown.
Yeah.
And could we just have a long period of economic slowdown where we don't see a lot of GDP growth, but we don't see a contraction because the labor market stays strong enough to continue to fund consumers and their spending?
Right. And that's one of those things, you know, really going back and looking at numbers, and in particular, looking at what was going on in the economy when we hit those three soft landings, right? So one of those soft landings was in 1966. Our labor market today, and yes, I realize we've changed the way we do the math.
The measure,
because it really we always do that.
Unfortunately, it's really important to note. Comparing historical data on unemployment is almost impossible because we measure it differently in how we count workers.
Right. However, if we only look at the number, not worry about the measurement itself, we look at the number, the soft landing in 1966 was mostly attributed to a fully employed labor force,
right? At about a 3.8% unemployment rate in 66. We're at about 3.7% today, a very healthy employment rate in the labor force.
Yep.
Right? The other piece on that soft landing side, we had a soft landing in 1984. Again, we've changed the way we historically measure the CPI, in particular core CPI, but in 1984, the core CPI was at a 5.1% year-over-year change. We're running at about a 5.3%, mm-hmm. which lines up with the soft landing numbers, or that, if you will, that growth recession sort of a concept.
Economic slowdown.
Yep.
Strong labor participation, continued increase in spending, but not a lot of sharp curve growth.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, I'm going devil's advocate this one a little bit now, because you got to do it the last segment. I'm doing it here. If okay. we also look at the hard numbers on the hard landings, in a hard landing scenario, that recession typically begins in less than 2 years after a rate hike cycle begins. So if there's a hard landing, we're coming up on that real fast because they started the rate hike cycle in March of 22. Within 24 months, that hard landing comes to play. So that floor could be coming up real fast. One of those indicators are your lending standards. And when lending standards begin to tighten, that usually signals that economic downturn. We also see that not just in the individual side, but on the corporate side as well. And right now, corporate loan demand, so companies going out and seeking loans, has fallen very steeply in the last 16 months. So companies aren't borrowing nearly as much, probably because the rates are up. But it's also at a level that is consistent with those past hard landing recessions.
Yesterday we got the SLUS report. Mm-hmm. Andrew, do you know what the SLUS report is?
No.
You SLUS, you lose.
Okay. love it.
Wow.
Senior Loan Officer Survey. And it expressly goes after what's happening with credit tightening. And it is absolutely compelling data that says overall credit tightening in America is dramatic, especially on the commercial side of things. Some on the residential as well. We don't see as much on my side of the fence. But overall credit tightening standards for investment and commercial has changed quite a lot since the beginning of 2022. We are absolutely seeing those standards get tighter. Of are we willing to lend our money? Now, part of it is, as the federal funds rate goes up, I, as a bank, I can stick my money in bonds and make a nice, healthy rate of
right.
return. Whereas mm-hmm. when the federal funds rate was at half of 1%, I had to loan my money out, whether it was a risky investment or not, to make a return. I now have another option, which leads
right.
to credit tightening. To keep the devil's advocate going one step further, though,
yes.
what happens if inflation doesn't abate? What happens if this strong, if right, we talked about inflation is too many dollars chasing too few goods. If consumer spending is not abating, if
right.
we continue to have a healthy job market and people continue to be employed and spend money, is it conceivable that Powell and the Federal Reserve look at this, hey, the economy's not slowing down the way I want it to. Unemployment's not going up the way we want it to. We actually have to strangle the economy a little bit more, continue to raise the federal funds rate to really put a crimp in economic activity.
Well, if I can go back to the we've got to see what they've said, not read into and create the scenario there. From what I have read, understanding that, you know, these are people, they can change their minds because they are being data dependent, that we're not likely to experience much more increase in that Fed funds rate. We are pretty close to the end of that. We're definitely going up July, and we saw that. There might be another one in September, and then it'll be time to push that pause button and take that long, slow breath.
I think there is a very decent chance that we are at the very end, maybe one more in September or November would be potentially likely, especially mm-hmm. with what they paused in June, raised
right.
in July.
Mm-hmm.
Do they pause again in September, raise in November? I think that's possible, but we probably are at the upper end. And then the question becomes, how long do we, it's called the gap.
Right.
There's a gap between the Federal Reserve raising rates, and then there's a period of time, it could be 2 months, it could be 20 months, to when the Fed has its first rate cut. Now, that gap is a really interesting economic time as well.
Yeah, and the actual numbers on that, the average is 8 to 18. 8 to 18 months when that gap starts to signal, okay, we've had it here long enough, we're going to bring it back down. And yeah, when that happens, most folks think, oh, great, the rates are coming down. That's actually typically not good news for markets as a whole. Markets usually perform poorly in that falling interest rate environment. And most of that is the question of, okay, well, how far are they actually going to pull these back? So we've got to worry about the economic activity in there and, quite frankly, the money that may have been flowing to us now going somewhere else entirely. So those particular businesses not growing as well. And then, well, how far are they going to drive that rate back down to the quote-unquote comfort levels? And this is a conversation that I will oftentimes point folks over to you guys over at Pinterest, Kyle, but I try to have that conversation with people. And that's your mortgage rate. The Fed may be bringing those rates down, but your rate may stay up. And oh, by the way, don't ever expect to see 2% again on a mortgage rate, because normal, and I've actually taken folks to the El Paso County Assessor's website, and you can pop in any property. Mm-hmm. You pop in the address, you can look at the ownership history. Part of that ownership history is what people have paid in terms of their interest rate. I was just sitting with clients yesterday, and I went through this and was showing them all the people over the years, because this particular one was built in 1994, who had interest rates at 7, 7.5, 8, 8.25 over the years, and they couldn't believe it.
So the resiliency in the housing market has been absolutely fascinating over these last 12, 18 months. There were a lot of people. In fact, Fannie Mae, the quasi-governmental agency that is the investor for most mortgages in America, released a report at the beginning of Q1 expecting a decline in overall values, and they flipped that at the end of Q2 to actually say there will be a modest increase in value. So it wasn't a huge swing overall, but when you go from small decline to small increase, that's a real change, I think, in expectations of what people are thinking. And so home values continue to be rock solid. Now, a part of that is, we've talked about this on the show before, an inventory problem and back to supply and demand. Right. There aren't enough, too many people for not enough houses, and that creates a very stable and safe floor. And so, you know, back to some practical for the man on the street, if I'm looking at buying a home and I'm saying I'm going to wait for home values to go down, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. It's still kind of that insulated area where we may see maybe that slowdown. I know I've got realtors I talk to a lot that maybe, like in the past, you know, couple years we've seen to driving down I-25. We may have been going, you know, 80, 90 miles an hour, but now the slowdown as far as valuations, home values, getting more into that normal kind of that speed limit.
I'm going 55.
We're still going 55.
I'm not in a traffic jam.
Yeah, we're not slowing. We're not crashed. We're not at a standstill.
Correct.
So we may not see those days of, you know, 10, 15% valuations, but we're still going to see some level of growth in a healthy market.
And in fact, there's some argument to be said that somebody actually might have better buying power at a 7% interest rate with where home values are today in a market like Colorado Springs or Southern Colorado, as opposed to if interest rates were to fall to 4% tomorrow, we would increase this massive amount of demand.
Right.
And actually that same person might actually get completely priced out. They might be better off buying a home in today's market, even though the interest rates are higher, and refinancing that rate later because they can actually get the house today.
So, Kyle, let me ask you then with that, as we're talking about rates and kind of getting into this, you know, more mortgagey side of things, where would you say your best guess would be? Where might be that kind of happy, just kind of average that we might get to that might kind of be that comfortable landing spot?
Yeah, I think it's very conceivable. Interest rates today are between 7 and 8%. A week ago, we were quoting some folks, again, different situation for everybody, but I saw interest rates being quoted in the low eights. So we're definitely up higher than a discount points getting people into the high sixes today. And that's where most people are kind of financing. Mm-hmm. So the question is, where will we go from here as inflation comes down? And I do think that is a key indicator that we haven't talked a lot about on the show today, but we're starting to see that slowdown in inflation.
Right.
The Fed is having an impact. We are slowing down inflation. As inflation comes down, we will see interest rates follow. It is a primary driver of interest rates.
Okay.
As we see inflation come down, I think you're going to see that 10-year Treasury yield come down. There is typically a 200 basis point spread historically between the 10-year Treasury yield and interest rates. Mm-hmm. So when the 10-year Treasury is at 4, interest rates are at 6. Now, interest rates are actually at 7, 300 basis point spread. That's a whole other conversation about mortgage servicing and the cost of that.
Right.
But let's stay away from that for now. Average is 200 basis points. As rates come down, I would expect us to get back to that average. If the 10-year Treasury could get into 2.9, 3.0, 3.1 type territory, and that range were to come back to the historical average, then I think there is a very conceivable world where interest rates are in the high fours, low fives, as a very stable place for where rates can be. Is that a guarantee? No, I don't have a crystal ball. But I don't think that's just pie in the sky optimism either. I think there is a legitimate economic path looking at the indicators to say the 10-year Treasury could go from 4.09 today to 2.99 or 3.01 over the next 12 to 24 months. And that would bring interest rates down somewhere, again, maybe low fives-ish, mid fives-ish, which still, if you financed at 6.625 and refinance at 5.5, you're going to be feeling pretty good about that.
Yeah.
Right. Right. One of the things that, this is almost coming full circle here, right? We talked about at the beginning of the show, the federal government getting their credit rating downgraded, which means they're going to be paying a higher interest rate. So it might take a little bit longer for that 10-year Treasury rate to actually come back down because that's the interest rate that the federal government is paying on a 10-year loan.
Correct. And so I think the real question, there is a legitimate debate, a fair debate, about how low will rates come, and more importantly, how long will it take to get there?
Right.
Is this an 8-month window, a 16-month window, a 35-month window, right? But I don't think there's a lot of debate that that's the direction we're going. The question is, how far will they come down and how long will it take? And that's why we're having this conversation with consumers about expectations and flexibility. That's been sort of the key words in the mortgage world. Expectations and flexibility. People are saying, I want a mortgage payment of X. Well, what are you basing that off of? Is that a realistic expectation? Can I borrow $400,000 or $500,000 at this rate and have a payment of X? No, you really can't. You need to have a payment of Y. So helping people with expectations and then really having a conversation about flexibility, because in today's world, if you're looking to buy a home, I think most... Here's my tip for the consumer today, Andrew.
Okay.
The takeaway in the last couple minutes of the show, as you're looking for a home today, have a conversation, look at your budget and say, okay, I'm probably going to flex somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I'm either going to get the house I really want that really meets my needs, and I'm probably going to have to flex on payment and pay a little more than I'm expecting.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to flex a little bit on the house and say, you know what? I'm not going to get the third car garage or the finished basement or the corner lot or the neighborhood I really wanted. And I'm going to stay more within the budget I really want, but I'm going to get less house and then I'll upgrade over time. But you're going to flex in one of those areas. And I think it's really helpful as a consumer to understand, which way are you more likely to flex?
Yeah, it's going back to that conversation we had about, you know, what are you doing on your Saturday night? Are you going to flex a little bit more? Are you going to be a little bit more uncomfortable but have that once-in-a-lifetime experience hanging out with Kyle and the other Swifties up with Taylor Swift? Or are you going to maybe settle to watching her recent special on Disney Plus in the comfort of your own home?
Well, and I think that's where it goes to expectations. What are you expecting and how do you manage those expectations? And that's why we're having these conversations. I'm talking, you know, 2 years ago, homes were flying off the shelf. You'd call me, get pre-approved on Thursday, go out, look at homes on Friday, be under contract on Saturday, close on the house the following Tuesday. And it was a whirlwind. Oh, yeah. By the way, you paid $40,000 over asking price with no appraisal gap. That world's completely changed. And so consumers today, and this is why we're having so many more conversations, and we encourage you, follow up. If you got questions about what's happening in the mortgage world or you're looking to buy or sell real estate, let us know, because people are having those conversations now 2, 3, 6 months out. Here's my plan. I'm looking to buy January of next year. What should I expect? How do I start putting, what credit do I need? What debt do I need to pay off? How do I increase my credit score? How do I maximize my situation? Before, I would just take what I could get. Now I know if I'm a little smarter and a little more prepared, I can actually improve my situation.
Yeah. And it's all going down to that preparation and getting ready for that new world, because as you mentioned, those days are long gone, probably not going to come back. So we're getting ready for another cliche term that we've gotten used to. We're getting ready for that new normal and what that new normal actually is.
But it's still a good time to buy. I know I say it every time, but we look at the market, we say prices are not going down. There is an opportunity right now. There are seller concessions on the table. There are ways to get into homes with creative tools like rate buydowns and temporary buydowns, things we can do to help get people into homes at payments that they can afford. Get into the house now, and if and when those rates decline, you'll be in a position to refinance and save money. But it's still a really good time to be in real estate. And I do believe that. I don't just say that because I'm in the business. I personally own real estate. I believe it's a place where you can put your money. And you can invest some with Rick, too, I suppose.
You know, and I actually was having a very similar conversation with a friend of mine who is a realtor, who said he's actually had that conversation recently that was, if you need to buy a house, now's the good time to buy. If you don't need to buy a house, don't buy one, right? It really comes down to things that simple. Don't upgrade just for the sake of upgrading, because you're paying more now just because.
But the pressures on housing haven't changed, right? The things that drive housing don't change just because we are in an economic slowdown. People are still getting married.
Yes.
People are still having babies. Kids are still going to college. Families are still right-sizing. People are getting divorced and having to sell or buy or refinance. All of the drivers that create activity within the housing world, people are still relocating here. The military is still moving people in and out. Like all of those things are still happening, and therefore there is still economic activity in the real estate market in Colorado.
Yes. Yes. And folks, if you've got questions about that activity, if you want to know about your involvement in that activity, Kyle, where do they give you guys a call?
Absolutely. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We'd love to connect, answer your questions, sit down for a cup of coffee, and see how we can help. Call or text the Fisk team at Pentrust Mortgage at 719-277-9238 or start online at fiskmortgage.com.
Awesome. Well, Kyle, thank you for joining us this week. We didn't get into much Rockies talk this time.
There's not much to talk about.
Well, yeah, just that little snippet at the beginning, but that's okay because I've sat in the seats. I understand why we're not talking much Rockies this time of year. And quite frankly, even though my Cubbies made a couple moves, not a lot of talk on that world yet either. Well, folks, that is all the time we've got for this week on Money Matters. We will be back again next week, and we will continue to talk about your money because your money matters. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.